Welcome to The Deep End by On Deck, a podcast where visionary builders, creators, and experts discuss world-changing ideas. I'm your host, Marshall Kozloff. Let's dive in.
Being famous is not really a benefit for most people. If you are an entertainer or a musician, somebody who you know needs attention and eyeballs on whatever you're doing, that's great. But I don't see a lot of benefit, especially today, to being famous. And so I prefer to keep the identity secret. And I've said to myself and to a few other people who asked me kind of in my inner circle, the only reason I would dox myself is if actual Elon asked me to. And I don't think he will, because I think he likes the running joke that is Bored Elon. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'll remain a secret.
At The Deep End, we're creating a space where we skip the surface level and go in depth into ideas that inspire people to build. I'll be your guide as we explore possible futures of internet communities, creator tools, climate tech, longevity, and much, much more. There are no experts in uncharted territory, only pioneers. The Deep End invites these trailblazers to turn their experiences into the knowledge and ideas others need to start their own founder odysseys. Joining me this week in The Deep End is someone whose name I actually don't know. I've never seen his face and don't know anything about his personal life. Online, he's known by the name Bored Elon Musk, and he's one of the most active pseudonyms on Twitter with 1.7 million followers. Pseudonyms are interesting because they are inherently meritocratic. Bias is impossible because nobody knows who you really are. As the internet becomes more crypto native and employment becomes more fluid, pseudonyms will only continue to rise in popularity. Already, DAOs are full of contributors that use pseudonyms. It's worth noting that pseudonymity is not anonymity. A pseudonym can build reputation that persists through interactions. Bored Elon is trying to make sure that as one of the first major pseudonyms, he sets up the right example of his online reputation. Besides posting memes or tweeting fake startup ideas, Bored Elon is spending a lot of time investing in real companies with the Bored Fund. Many founders are happy to take his money without knowing who he really is. A future where we can interact based on the merits of our activity over our identity is one that will benefit many. Beyond the nature of pseudonyms and his investment activity, we discuss the metaverse, the pseudonymous tech stack, the future of deepfakes, and much, much more. Bored Elon Musk, welcome to The Deep End.
Thank you so much. Big fan of you, Marshall, and it's a pleasure to speak with you.
We're speaking about pseudonymity, but I actually wanted to start with a tweet you put out earlier in September, because I think it really captures a moment we're in that a lot of people are getting excited about, and the conversation around everything we're about to hit really is captured by this. So you started the tweet off by saying, it feels like there's an avalanche of creativity right now. There's not. Could you fill in the rest of your perspective on the current moment, why people seem to be producing at the output that they're producing, risk-taking, et cetera, et cetera? Because it really sets the tone for everything we're covering today.
Sure. So I thought a lot about this kind of pre and post Bored Elon. What I meant by that tweet is I think that people have, as you said, had a lot of bottled up creativity, and that most people are quite creative. And the issue isn't that we're lacking as a society in being able to come up with new ideas. It's that there's just a fear of putting things out there. And for the purposes, I guess, of this conversation, I'll refer to my real identity as just real me, and Bored as Bored. It sounds weird to talk about myself as two different people, but let's just go with it. But prior to starting the Bored account, I found myself to be somebody who was a little bit less nervous about trying things out and putting them out in public. Web experiments, you know, creating products, saying things in public that maybe I haven't thought through completely. And people always would note, oh, you're such a creative person. You know, you're always doing so much interesting stuff. And I think the biggest thing there was that I just was never really afraid to look stupid. because I realized quickly that if you try something and fail, or if you do or say something a little stupid, people don't really care. They tend to care when you succeed. And so once I kind of got over that hurdle, I continued to create and put things out there. And then when Board came into existence, I basically got this extra layer of protection, because it wasn't, you know, real me who was going to potentially look stupid or say something that didn't make sense. It was this character that didn't really have any attachment to a real person. And so I think what you're seeing now with the internet is that people are creating these identities that are disattached from their real identity, that, you know, isn't being watched by their, you know, employer or friends or the public. And they're able just to move around more freely and do what they want. And I think that that's what you're seeing with creativity, is it's the untapped thinking and untapped creativity that's coming out. It's not that there's any more of it. So hopefully that adds a bit more perspective to the tweet.
Yeah, and just two more parts of it. You specifically referenced the ad-free business models. What part does that play in it?
So I think just to, I guess, set some context for the ad model in general, you know, people create content. That content is funded generally by advertising. So if I'm a writer, if I'm a streamer of video, if I make music online, a lot of times I'm monetizing by selling ad space, and I'm basically incentivized to get as many eyeballs as possible so that I can make my advertisers happy, right? Because advertisers want impressions and they want to reach as many people as possible. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm creating what I want to create. It means I'm just creating what a lot of people will engage with. And so with things like cryptocurrency and other forms of monetization that we're starting to emerge that are not based on advertising, I think we're seeing people creating what they want to create. And I hope that that continues, because the quality of content then is going to improve over time, because it is driven by the creator's interests and not necessarily by the advertisers.
And speaking of the pseudonymous part of this conversation, I'm going to keep referencing your tweets because you're obviously good at that format, and it really actually helps me organize a show effectively. So thank you for that. But you kind of set the stage for this conversation by saying that developing a pseudonym is one of the best alternative investments you can make today. And considering the fact that earlier in the conversation, you've been interchangeably referring to yourself as Bored Elon or just yourself as an actual person, when you say developing this character, this persona, do you think it's essential that there be a almost separate thing? Or is this just as simple as, let's say, I, Marshall, creating an anonymous Twitter account that's basically still just me, doesn't have a character? How do you think about that part of it?
Yeah, I think the key is to create another identity, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a character the way I've kind of built up Bored Elon. It can just be another identity that is known for certain things. I think to what's happened in the world of gaming, you know, for anyone who plays video games in sort of a live multiplayer setting, most people don't have their, you know, their real name as their gamer tag. It's just some silly thing that makes them laugh. You know, it's cool Marshall 69 or whatever it might be.
And maybe laugh. And, there we go.
And so that, and you know, when you see all these you know, YouTube streamers and Twitch streamers, they often have these ridiculous names, and that's what they go by. Like, one of the biggest ones is Mr. Beast. Most people don't know Mr. Beast's actual name, and it doesn't matter. And so that idea of creating an identity that's separate from your real ID really has been around in gaming for the past decade or so. And now it's starting to spill over into social media and I guess the web in general. I created a character based on Elon because it sort of gave me a framework for my own creativity and just some parameters in terms of the content I wanted to create. But it was sort of a happy accident. And I have increasingly moved away from this character that I initially created, which is kind of a parody of a real person who we all know is his own character, because I've wanted to separate myself and kind of create my own identity with my own interests. So, you know, I can't really walk away from the name Bored Elon. It's always going to be that. But I'm trying not to focus too much on riffing off of him and what he says and does, and rather just leverage kind of the you know, the cultural zeitgeist that he has created to create my own identity.
What I love about what you just said is you're speaking to your ability to move on from just a shtick that could get old after a certain amount of time, not just from the audience perspective, but also from your perspective. So at any creative venture, that's very important. I want to get to the alternative investment part of that development you're referring to in the tweet, in the sense that how should someone think of pseudonymous identity? Is it an investment that gives you opportunities? Obviously, we'll get into this along your end. Is it an outlet for dealing with personal frustration? Is this basically up to each individual to figure out on their own? How do you conceive of this part of it?
Yeah, I love that. And I love the way you framed it, because I think the latter is what most people assume, is that, you know, you create this anonymous or pseudonymous identity as a way to just vent. And that usually, you know, is seen as like trolling and being able to say whatever you want, even if it's offensive, and not get in trouble for it. And that is very uninteresting to me, and not a good use of a separate identity. I think that if you have a specific interest, you know, I mentioned gaming before, but maybe it's politics, maybe it's literature, maybe it is architecture, that is something that maybe is hard to lean into and talk about with your real ID, because your real ID is not someone who, you know, has the credentials, quote unquote, to discuss those things. Or it's something that you can't really talk about because maybe you're employed in a particular field where it's just out of the realm of what you should be discussing. So when I say that it's an investment, it basically gives you a platform to do something that is completely different than what the world has kind of pigeonholed you into. And I think, you know, for me in particular, it's given me the opportunity to create companies, invest in startups, you know, connect with really amazing people, and do things that my normal real ID hasn't been able to. You know, having 1.7 million Twitter followers basically just gives you kind of automatic credentials, for better or for worse. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it gives me access to things that sort of me and other, quote unquote, you know, real individuals wouldn't have. So when I say that it's an investment, it very much is an investment in opportunities. And it's one that basically protects your real ID from whatever you are trying to experiment in. So if you really want to go into something that's outside of kind of your credentialed area, it gives you that shot. And luckily, with the way the web is moving, people don't care as much about your real identity. They care about what you think and your actions. And so you're able to prove yourself and show your merit without necessarily tying your real identification to it.
I love the way you set that up to keep the compliment train going, because when I first saw Balaji Srinivasan tweeting about this, I've always thought pseudonymous performance was in the category of trolling or just, you know, protecting people from being edgy. And I guess I was like, okay, that's fine. But what I think is so helpful about your career and your space is you've actually demonstrated that there's something additive about it, and that actually what causes there to be a really interesting opportunity here. Something I'm curious about, and this is always what I've wondered, if you think of just the stereotypical perception that, oh, like everyone wants their 15 minutes of fame, or all the kids want to become YouTubers when they grow up. You know, you're referencing Mr. Beast. Obviously, people know his face. How do you just think from a pure human nature perspective, the pseudonymous aspect just operates here? Because look, you've got, you know, literally millions of Twitter followers. People would pay millions of dollars to have that. Do you ever just wake up and say, man, I really could just take my mug, put it in the profile pic, and then just be famous, at least within a very specific set of people? How do you just think of that part of this?
So in other words, change the profile pic to myself and basically just take over Bordelon and make it real me.
Yeah, you'd have a lot of Twitter followers. It would get you a lot of attention. That would actually get you even. It would feed a cycle of that. And I just wonder if you ever just wake up one day thinking, man, I could just put myself out there.
It's a great question. It's one that a lot of people have asked me about, and I think over the years running this account, I've also watched other pseudonymous identities dox themselves and reveal who they are. And in, I would say 100% of the time, it's a letdown. People don't really care who the real me is. And I think it's just stroking your ego if you do that. Now, if you feel like, you know, you have to do it because it's going to be found out anyway. I understand that. But I have come to the conclusion that there makes no sense to take over the account and just kind of reveal who I am. I often reference Banksy, and I'm paraphrasing, but his quote was something along the lines of, if you knew who I really was, you'd be extremely unimpressed. And so there's just a mystique to not knowing who Bored Elon is. And the other part of it, honestly, is I've always kind of liked this idea of rich, not famous, not rich and famous, because being famous is not really a benefit for most people. If you are an entertainer, a musician, somebody who you know, needs attention and eyeballs on whatever you're doing, that's great. But I don't see a lot of benefit, especially today, to being famous. And so I prefer to keep the identity secret. And I've said to myself and to a few other people who asked me kind of in my inner circle, the only reason I would dox myself is if actual Elon asked me to. And I don't think he will, because I think he likes the running joke that is Bored Elon. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'll remain a secret.
Now, what's useful about you bringing out the example of musicians or, you know, film and TV stars wanting to just be out there, what do you think are the career categories and backgrounds of folks who are going to be drawn to different directions? So, for example, you know, certain people, like you're an investor, founder, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think people who are in that space are more drawn to the pseudonymous part versus people who are used to or have some degree of psychological compulsion to perform publicly? I'm curious how you think about that.
It's funny because, you know, when you think about it, even people who are performers, musicians and actors, et cetera, they're also kind of a character, right? You know, their inner circle, their friends and family might know them as a completely different person. So even though you're seeing their face and you know their name, you're not really seeing that real person. But to answer your question, I think that if your job is not based on, I guess, aesthetics or based on you know, your humanity being kind of a brand that people want to buy, there's not a lot of reason to tie it to your real identity. So when it comes to something like building a web-based startup or being a writer or, you know, being involved in something that is sort of offline, I think that, you know, the pseudonymous identity makes a lot of sense. And what I will say from my own personal experience and what I've been observing is that people are raising millions and millions of dollars to build companies, to start funds, to create products, and no one knows who they are. And that is a wild thing to me that probably didn't happen even 5 years ago, but now it's becoming normalized. And what's happening, and I'm trying to contribute to this, is to make it normal and to overcome the stereotype of anonymous web identities are trolls or they are up to nefarious, you know, deeds, and instead just show, no, they're just basically giving you all the information that you need in order to make a decision to work with them or to follow them, and not volunteering anything about their personal life that isn't really contributing to whatever service or value you're getting out of them.
I want to focus on that part because zooming a bit into the future, I'm not sure we've, as a society, structured ourselves or prepared ourselves for mass pseudonymity in the sense that, think of the concept of an open secret in an industry or different ties, nepotism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are so many structures and habits and just manners that we've constructed around everyone knowing what everyone does or things getting discovered that it's a little, I don't know, I was thinking about this when I was reading about Aussie media today, because that continues to spin out of control in a variety of different ways. But people were talking about, hey, it was an open secret that this thing wasn't real, or this thing was bad, or this person had this bad reputation. And I'm kind of wondering, what does it look like in a society where there are incentives against the existence of secrets because it's possible to tell the truth or advocate for things in ways that aren't tied to your offline reputation where you could suffer consequences for sowing said truths? So how do you just think about that at a societal level?
Yeah, I think that the last 2 years, of, you know, the pandemic and people being forced to spend more time inside and thus online has made it, I think people have embraced this sort of online life that has emerged. People sometimes refer to this concept of the metaverse, which I don't really like that term, but you know, it's this idea of moving around the web, having interactions that you would normally have in real life, you know, having parties, having conversations, playing games together, doing stuff together online instead of in the real world. And it's a little bit dystopian and dark in some ways, but the optimist in me thinks it is how it's going to be, and we're going to find ways to connect with each other in this new sort of digital format. In terms of, you know, the pseudonymous identity and not necessarily tying you know, what you think and what you say and what you do to a real identity and having no consequences to that. I think we're going to go through a little bit of a messy period where there are going to be bad actors who take advantage of pseudonymity or anonymity to make money, to harm others. But in the long run, I think as this gets normalized, and as more and more things are transparent through technologies like crypto, people will start to behave better and learn that their actions are tied to an identity. Even if it's not their real identity, and it is a pseudonymous identity, there will be consequences to not being a good citizen, if you will. So in my own case, right, like I'm bored Elon. At this point, I've built a reputation, and I have a reputation to lose. So for me, I'm incentivized to, you know, do what I think is right and do what I think and do what other people think is right. And the value of that is I'm able to grow my following, right? Because if you're anonymous and you burn your address tomorrow because you did something bad, you're not going to get 1.7 million followers doing that. So if you want to grow your reach, you'll need to basically have a good reputation, and therefore you will be a good actor, I hope. Now, will society kind of embrace this and make this a common thing? I think it's going to take some time, but I think we're quickly moving in that direction. And I do think that, again, sort of the pandemic accelerated this cultural change.
I want to take a quick side tangent. Why don't you like the term metaverse?
So people keep referring to the metaverse as like one singular place where everything is interoperable. And I think the reality is that we're going to have many versions of metaverses. That could be in video games. It could be a VR experience. It could be Twitter Spaces, and it could be something else. I think the problem with this idea of one big place where everything is connected is that it requires everything to be interchangeable and interoperable, but also neutral. Nobody can own that neutral ground that we all live in. And the problem with that is no one's going to take the time to build something that they can't own, or it's going to be very difficult for that to happen, if that makes sense. It's like, imagine if the United States picked one state, let's just say South Dakota, and nobody ran South Dakota. We all got to just use South Dakota and do whatever we wanted there and be citizens together. And that would be a metaverse. But that might be very chaotic, right? Because no one's kind of putting parameters into place and making sure that the roads are repaired and everything's working. So I just think it's not in human nature to have a thing that people continue to refer to as the metaverse. I think in the movie Ready Player One, in the book, you know, they kind of used that term and showed that, you know, people lived in this virtual world and everybody lived in that world. And the reason I hated that premise was because there was kind of this single architect who had built it, and then we all basically as humanity jumped into it. And I think the idea with decentralization and what's happening with Web3 is that it is neutral and nobody owns it. So I don't know if we can build such a place. So I think we're just going to have a lot of mini metaverses that, you know, you can jump in and out of depending on what you're interested in.
I will submit metaverse-sci as the full term for that. I want to hit the Web3 stuff in a second because we've done a lot of good coverage there, but let's just get to what the question that I'm frankly wondering and everyone and their cousin is wondering, like, what does the pseudonymous tech stack look like yesterday, today, and tomorrow?
The basics of it are a email address that is not connected to your real identity. That could be, you know, just a Gmail address you spin up, or a proton mail, whatever. That's kind of the start of it. That's where all your connections will sort of, that's the hub of your spokes. And then it comes down to what other channels you want to use, right? So in my case, it's Twitter. It could be Discord. It could be a Substack blog. And basically, whatever it is, it's just, you are providing minimal information to whatever platform you establish yourself on. And so if you have a burner email address, basically, or one that isn't connected to your real identity, that's basically the stack. You can then run with it. Now, security experts might disagree and they might think you need to do a lot more. But I think, you know, for most people, this is enough of a stack to get things done. Now, if you want to run a business or make investments or transact the way I do, that's where crypto comes into play. And, the entry level cryptocurrency user will probably have something like a Coinbase account or Nexo or one of the other, you know, large exchanges. That's problematic because that is connected to, you know, a real ID. So that's where things like web wallets, like a MetaMask, and decentralized finance applications can help you, because they connect to a wallet that has no identification connected to it. And then you're basically able to monetize. And that is what has helped me, you know, convert the 1.7 million followers into an actual business. Because prior to jumping into crypto, Bored Elon didn't make me any money. It was just a hobby, because I wasn't able to accept, you know, PayPal or Venmo or Stripe or anything like that, because that would have required me to dox myself.
And looking to the future, we were talking a bit before the recording started about how there's a possibility of voice changing software, video coming down the line. How do you think about that space?
So my big fear with doing things like this and Twitter Spaces is that eventually we're going to have software that kind of works like Shazam for music, but for people's voices. And you can basically identify someone's voice very quickly and figure out who they are. I don't think we're many years away from that. So I might be screwing myself over by having this conversation with you, Marshall, but I think you're great. So I'm going to do it.
Look, you've done enough Twitter Spaces that it's the cat's already out of the bag, no matter what.
The cat's out of the bag. Yeah, exactly. So I've got a couple of years of protection, but I've met with founders who have shown me demos of conversations where basically they are speaking in real time and their voice is being changed. And even a few examples of that happening with video, where an avatar of a real human face that isn't their face is speaking and moving the way it's supposed to. And it looks like a different person is speaking than who actually is. Now, it's not perfect. There's a little bit of the uncanny valley situation still, where it's like 99% real, but not quite real. There's glitches here and there. But you can imagine that technology is going to get better and better. And so what that means is a pseudonymous identity doesn't just have to be a Twitter profile that just, you know, writes text. It can be somebody who actually has conversations where you can hear their voice, you can see the face, and that isn't that person. And that feels very kind of Black Mirror-y, but that is the inevitable conclusion of where this story goes. And so people who want to build a pseudonymous profile are going to have a lot of tools in their stack that they can use to tell that story.
You know, it's funny. I'll take as many chances as I can to reference the Ozzy story, but the funny note for what kind of blew it open was the COO of the company attempting to use a voice changer to fool Goldman Sachs into believing that a YouTube executive was speaking for him in terms of the veracity of the platform. How do you think about identity in a world where it's more possible to either hijack other people's identity or portray yourself? How do you just think about that part? Because it goes to your earlier point about how we have a messy period ahead of us, no matter how this plays out, for good or for ill.
Yeah, that is the dark side and the scary side of all of this. Is as easy as it will become to create a new identity, it will become just as easy to steal someone else's. You know, I think we've all seen videos of you know, deep fake videos, essentially, where people are taking a real person's conversations, whether they're, you know, speaking via audio or, you know, video, and then an algorithm or a program can essentially make them say anything. And we live in a world where trust in information in institutions is already on the decline, and people are having a hard time knowing who to believe or what to believe, this is going to compound that problem even more. I guess the good news or the light at the end of the tunnel is that if everyone starts to assume that these things are fake as the default, it will force us as a society to come up with better tools to establish authenticity. I'm not technical enough to explain, you know, what that might look like, but I will say with technology like NFTs, non-fungible tokens, we have at least found a way to establish like a static image and whether that is authentic. And, you know, we can figure out who created it and who took it over and who owns it. And so if we can migrate that kind of technology to things like video and audio, where people can very easily verify if something is true, I think it'll save us from this problem. But it doesn't necessarily overcome the issue of hundreds of thousands of people sharing content that, you know, they haven't verified because it happens to just agree with the point that they want to make or their opinion.
Hitting on the big part of the pseudonymity stuff before we get to a couple of your other thoughts and we get to Q&A, can you talk about the idea that Bology, yourself, a lot of people talk about a lot, which is that pseudonymity online has, especially given the remote work revolution, has the ability to affect hiring, affect bias issues, actually become more meritocratic in the previous system. Just love your expansive thoughts on that discourse, because I think that's the thing where we're the furthest away from that operationalizing itself, but it definitely gets people excited from a promise perspective.
Yeah, I think that trend is very real. So, you know, going back to this idea of how society has changed because of the pandemic, remote work became a very common thing for most kind of corporate employees. People moved to different locations. Companies became way more open to hiring outside of their own city where they're headquartered at, and that even translated to hiring folks from different countries. But a lot of individuals who maybe had a leg up in the hiring process because of the school they went to, the place they grew up, how their name sounds, what color their skin is. These are all unfortunate things and biases that still exist. But in the world of pseudonymous identities, you know, if you are being hired to do a specific thing, let's say you're a web developer, all that really matters is how good of a web developer you are and the track record that you've left online that proves your work. And what that means for employers is that they can get labor that's high quality and they can basically find the best possible price. And that best possible price is probably from someone who isn't in the United States. So this isn't a good trend for the US or any other country that has very expensive talent, but it's a great opportunity for people who are in emerging countries who maybe couldn't get a job before because they didn't go to Stanford or they didn't, you know, get a certain certificate or you know, don't have the right background. It's almost like, I remember about a decade ago, a lot of companies started experimenting with this idea of looking at resumes and removing the name from the resume because there was a kind of a bias sometimes that hiring managers might have when they read someone's name, they might make assumptions about who that person is. And this idea of pseudonymous identity takes that to the next level. You don't know anything about anyone. You just know how good of a job they're going to do. And if the point is you want to pay someone to do a job, all you care about is that they can do that job well. So overall, I think it's great for the globe and all people on Earth, I guess. But it's not great if you're somebody who had a leg up because of your credentials or where you were born. It's going to be rough because you're going to have to perform at the same level as now everybody else in the world, and not just, you know, your very immediate peer group.
A complete disaster for those of us who are based on the East Coast, as I am right now. Let's talk about your fund, which is something people are really curious about, and how I think that's the part which, when I saw that, I was like, wow, like this actually is not just a Twitter narrative, but this is a real thing with real tangible things attached to it. How do you think of like the state and the future of your growth in the space?
Yeah, there's a lot of different irons in the fire, but one thing that has emerged in the last year is largely thanks to, you know, cryptocurrency and being able to sort of monetize my distribution, I've had the opportunity of accumulating enough wealth to start angel investing. And the interesting thing about angel investing as Bored Elon is that people care a lot more about me being on their pitch deck or, you know, in their news release than they care about my money. Most founders tell me they don't really have a hard time raising money these days. It's actually quite easy, which is, you know, a good and a bad thing. But it's not the check. It's the distribution. And so as that has continued to increase those opportunities, it makes a lot of sense for me to kind of focus my attention on that and continue in investing in things that I think serve other pseudonymous identities, right? So that's decentralized communications platforms, it's decentralized identity tools and the stack that you referred to. And it's also gaming, just because that's a personal interest. So I'm putting my dollars and my distribution against companies that are building things that I think are important for the future of society. And the interesting thing in terms of, you know, the startups is, again, they don't really care who I am. And in some cases, I do have to dox myself to founders, and we do a mutual NDA and they protect my identity. But, you know, as it relates to, you know, the news release or any kind of public communications, it's just Bored Elon and he's investing in something. One of my favorite recent investments was about a month ago in a decentralized communications platform called XMPT. And there were about 100 different investors, but my favorite part about that was that Snoop Dogg was one of the investors and I was listed right underneath him. So that was kind of a feather in the cap for me.
You can proudly retire. So in our last bit before we transition to audience Q&A, I would just love to get your broad thoughts. So let's start with, and you've referenced this, video games. I am in the weird position of, I just stopped playing games after college for a few years. So I just woke up one day, it feels like mid-pandemic, and everyone and their cousin is talking about video games. So just what is happening right now in the space that has gotten people, including yourself, so excited?
Yeah, and I mirror that. I mean, I love the video games industry and space. I played a lot of games in high school and college, but I don't actually play that much on my own. I'm more interested in building within it. But what's happening in the video game space is that video games as an activity is becoming a job where people are actually making real money thanks to blockchain technology by doing certain things in video games, which, you know, rewind 10 years ago or 20 years ago, sounds absolutely batshit that you, sorry, I shouldn't swear.
No, it's okay.
but what's happened is, I'll actually reference a great piece written by Packy McCormick. And, you know, you guys have spoken, but he sort of used this analogy. If you think about a corporate employee who works for a big company like a Coca-Cola or Rolex, that person goes to work. They click a series of buttons throughout the day on their computer, and then they achieve certain goals, and then they get paid. And that's a job. But in a way, that's also a video game. You're just taking certain actions to get a reward. Now, if you can do the same thing in a video game where you can click a certain set of buttons in a row and achieve a certain set of actions, and somebody might pay you to do that because it benefits them financially, that's kind of the same thing. So therefore, having a job in a video game is really not any less important than having a corporate job. Now, there are jobs that are very important, like, you know, that are necessary for society, like, you know, being a doctor, for example. But I think that about half of the work that people do in this country, in the United States, are not, quote unquote, necessary. They are just things that are nice to have. And as people find more interesting ways to spend their time and money online and in digital platforms versus physical things, basically that's going to become normalized. And so what you're seeing with video games is people establishing economies and building real work for themselves and others. And that is going to grow and grow. And so that's why I am investing heavily in anything related to blockchain gaming, because I do think that that is going to be an enormous opportunity for growth. And again, some people might see that as a dystopia, but some people might look at the corporate employee that we see in places in the movie Office Space as another version of dystopia that also isn't very promising. So I'm betting on video games being the dystopia that we like a little bit better.
Oh, that is such a fun reference, because it speaks to, because Office Space is such a specifically 1990s Gen X movie, mm-hmm. in terms of that office, the commute, the terrible food, just all of that. Just what, how do you just think about the quote unquote office for a 20 or 30 something like myself? And because once again, like the world of Office Space no longer exists. So it's a movie that gets funnier and funnier to watch every year. But just what is, you know, it's almost actually been 20 years since that movie came out. What would you describe the office, quote unquote, as today?
It's really, I think if you're graduating from school today or you're in your 20s, it's you sitting in your home. Maybe your roommate is 20 feet away if you live with somebody, and you're on your computer. And you're spending your day in Zoom calls, and then you're taking breaks to get errands done, and nobody cares because no one's looking over your shoulder. You're not commuting an hour each way to work. You're not having chit chat with people you work with because that's kind of the social norm. So I think the office today basically is represented with you doing about 3 to 4 hours of work per day, instead of being in a specific location for 8 to 10 hours, still working 3 to 4 hours of work a day, but then filling it with all this other stuff that, you know, kind of comes with it. So basically the new office is basically, it's time. It's extra time that you have. And the physical location doesn't really matter. That can be anywhere you want to be as long as you have an internet connection. Again, this only applies to a certain kind of worker. There are things that need to be done physically and that won't stop. But a large portion of the world who, you know, kind of typically works in an office, that idea is radically changed. And any company that I think that is forcing people to go back into a physical space is going to learn in 3 to 5 years that is not going to work, and their employees are going to leave for the freedom that working remotely offers.
And I put a pin in this earlier, so let's get to it. Would just love your broad thoughts on the Web3 space.
Yeah, I see Web3 as largely the new version of the internet that is built on blockchain technology, where everything is transparent and increasingly decentralized, right? So I think the internet started off as decentralized, but it was very complicated. You kind of had, you know, a browser, and you had to figure out how to get to a website. And it was all very sort of manual. So there was a steep learning curve. And then you had things like AOL pop up. And then later on, you know, Facebook and large kind of websites like Yahoo.com that put everything in one place. And that was easier. And that brought the masses in. And that's kind of Web 2.0. But now everybody's on board and everybody understands how to use mobile apps and the internet. And so it's going back the other way. And the pendulum is now swinging towards decentralization, which is there are no owners of platforms. It's owned by everybody. And they might even have a financial stake in it. Again, the learning curve is difficult. Sometimes to, you know, use blockchain technologies, you've got to learn stuff that you haven't really used before. But people will, again, overcome that learning curve. And there will be companies that create a really friendly or user-friendly front layer for it that will bring more and more people into it. And I think the advantage to that is when you have more decentralized platforms, whether it's for social media or finance or anything else like that, there isn't sort of one choke point where something can go wrong, or one person or one small group of people can make decisions. It has to be done out in public and often through the consensus of the majority. So I think that we're going to start to see this idea of decentralization flourish on the web. And if that becomes more and more accepted and common, that might then spill over into society and government and how we sort of run our civilization. That might take a little bit longer, but we can start with the web. So I think that Web3 really is just this idea of decentralizing power, attention, money, and spreading it out across basically all of us in an egalitarian way.
That's a good place to transition to the Q&A section. Jackson, Producer Jackson, official titles, of course. Do you want to come on and get the first cue?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go first. Take advantage of such of that platform. Bored Elon, thanks so much for coming on. You've done a great job of building your pseudonymous following through oftentimes memes, usually of Elon Musk himself. And like, there's plenty of them that are hilarious and have contributed to your rapid growth. So far in this episode, you've laid out all the advantages of building a pseudonymous following, the extended reach and the distribution that that brings with the sort of portable reputation. But could you talk a little bit about your growth strategy and how you might advise someone interested in starting a pseudonym, how to go about growing that account, whether it's through a community or through sort of this meme approach that you've taken?
Yeah, and I will say that where I've gotten today with the Bordelon account is a little bit of an accident. When I started it, I didn't expect for this to happen, nor did I realize or know at that time that Elon Musk was going to become a bigger and bigger personality. So I did kind of luck out a little bit. But I think that, you know, if somebody's starting from scratch today and doesn't want to attach themselves to a real person and kind of ride their coattails the way I did by accident, I think it's about finding your niche and finding something you're really good at and establishing your identity in that community. And, you know, it's easier to do that today with things like Reddit and Discord, where you can find segments of interests that, you know, where people are grouped together. So, you know, it's finding what you're good at, what you're interested in, and then finding your community and then growing from there. And once you've established yourself as really good at something or knowledgeable on one particular subject, I think you can then parlay that reach that you've built into other areas that are tangentially related, and then continue to just broaden your horizons from there. And that's kind of what I did. You know, it started off as just a joke account. And now, you know, now I'm building businesses and investing and doing all these other things. You do have to establish yourself, though, in one area first. I think that's the right strategy, and then grow from there.
Sure. So curious, like also today you've talked about all of these like ranging advantages of your reach. Obviously, like there are bad actors on the internet. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to what makes you worried about potential for abuse among pseudonyms.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I'm trying to be the opposite of that and set a good example, because I don't want the bad actors to be the ones getting the headlines, and showing, you know, here are the downsides of pseudonymity or anonymity. But I think that there's a lot of money right now flowing through the world of cryptocurrency. And what you're unfortunately seeing is people who are not known, who are pseudonyms, who are taking advantage of that to scam people. And, you know, that's not necessarily a new thing. People have been scamming other people for thousands of years and in various degrees, but it's the scale of it now that is troubling. You know, people can run away with millions of dollars fairly easily today. And that tends to be what media outlets want to cover. It's a sexier story. So that's a huge downside. I think that, again, though, what I spoke to earlier about reputation does matter, is you kind of can only use your identity one time to scam people and then you're done. So my hope is that if somebody is investing in building up an identity and does amass, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands of followers, they're not going to want to burn that to run away with a bunch of money or do something nefarious, because they are forever going to lose any credibility. And then, you know, from the other side of the angle, from a, I guess, a consumer perspective or everyday person perspective, don't trust a pseudonym that is, you know, 2 days old. I think you need to gauge the credibility of a pseudonym the same way you gauge the credibility of any real person. See how long they've been around, see what their contributions are. And especially if money is involved, do your due diligence. I think that one of the big issues that I've seen in sort of the crypto space and Web3 is that there's a pylon mentality. If a bunch of people are talking about a cool project or a, you know, a cool new cryptocurrency, you want in on it too, because it's like that herd mentality. But it's important that we all make our own decisions and all do our own research, because just because a lot of people want something doesn't mean you should want it too. So I think, you know, again, back to this idea of things being messy, we are gonna see rug pulls, as the cool kids call it, of people, you know, basically investing into projects and then losing some money. But hopefully, whoever makes that mistake, the first mistake can be a not super costly one, and then they won't repeat it in the future.
Awesome, thank you.
I will take us out with one last question, which is actually a rather obvious one that I should have asked at the start. What has been the cost for you of pseudonymity?
It's weird to talk about this with anyone in my immediate circle. There's only a few people who know who I am. And it's not because I am worried about them spilling the beans. It's because just having the conversation and revealing this other existence to them is very, very weird, especially people who are not in sort of, you know, the tech world. So that's one cost. The other cost is that, and this is like, I don't know if it's really a cost, I guess it's an opportunity cost, but, you know, I've been running this account for 8 years and doing it in parallel with kind of my real world identity, working, all these things. About a year ago, Bored Elon was earning me 10 times more money than my real job. And my real job paid quite well. And so you run into a situation where you start to think about, wow, I have this other identity that is more, I guess, powerful and able to accumulate wealth and connect with people than the real me. And it's kind of a weird feeling, right? Like you live your life playing by the rules, going to school, getting a job, doing all these things. And then you can create this character that isn't you, who achieves a lot more than you. So it's not a downside, but it's kind of a little bit of salty grapes, I guess, right? Like by doing something that's completely different than the traditional model, it ends up being the more successful version of you. So I don't know. I guess that's like, you know, for first world problems or whatever, but it's a weird kind of thought that I battle with as Bored Elon gets bigger and bigger.
It's a really interesting dynamic. Well, Bored Elon, thank you so much for joining us in the deep end. Anything you'd like to shout out that's coming either down the pipeline or is recent?
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is great. I love the conversation. You know, for anybody who hasn't been following me on Twitter, I would recommend checking me out, twitter.com/BoredElonMusk. And in my bio is a link tree with all sorts of projects that I'm working on. And I would love for people to go down that rabbit hole and reach out to me if they have any questions.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Thank you to everyone in the audience as well, too. Thanks for joining us in the deep end. If you enjoyed your stay, give us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with your friends and colleagues to help grow the show with us. We've also got show notes and more episodes available at ideas.beyonddeck.com. See you next time.